It's the summer of 1979, and I'm out with my friends Damon, Peter, and Roger, and we're out one night, and we're hungry. It's about midnight, and we want ribs. So we decide we're going to go down to Leon's Pig Pen at the corner of Greenmount and North Avenue. Yeah, right? The ribs are great there, and they have a lot of, you know, just enough foil-wrapped Wonder Bread to soak up the sauce. It's great, right? So we get down there about 12:30, park the car on North Avenue, and get out. We're not going to fit in. We're four white guys, and beyond that, we're not dressed appropriately. I have on a blue Connecticut College T-shirt, and one of us, I think Roger, has on tennis whites. It's true, right? So we go in. There may be maybe eight customers in the place, all black. And as we walk in, the place just goes silent. And then one of the customers kind of, you know, gets the attention of a guy behind the counter. And he kind of gestures to us and he says, "Serve these colored folks." Yeah. Yeah. And we got our food without incident. We went back to somebody's house to eat. But the statement really stuck with me. It was 9 years earlier, though, the first time I felt like one of the colored folks. And that was when I entered Pimlico Junior High School as a seventh grader. At the time, I'm living in Mount Washington. I go to Mount Washington Elementary, School 221 on Selgrave. From kindergarten through sixth grade. And so my family lives in Mount Washington. And that school is a relatively small school, a lot of Jewish kids, some non-Jewish kids, but very few black kids, very homogenous. In fact, the only black kids that I can specifically remember are two brothers, Isaac and Samuel Rosenberg, right? So even the black kids might have been Jewish, right? Yeah. Yeah. So I know Pimlico is going to be a different place. I mean, it's a much larger school. It held 2,700 students that year. It was a little bit overcrowded. And 90 to 95% black. So I know it's going to be different, but it turns out to be pretty rough. There are a couple things that make that so. One is that I am a little 12-year-old, very scrawny, maybe 75 pounds, 4.5 feet tall, at least 5 years away from even the hint of a mustache. I'm scrawny. And then on top of it, pretty much all the students that came from Mount Washington, and probably some of the other schools too, were put into special classes as we got into Pimlico. So there was the accelerated class for kids coming from, I guess, high-performing schools where these kids applied themselves, and then the enriched class for kids from those schools who didn't apply themselves. I was enriched. But the upshot of that is that we didn't really get to mingle with the other kids. So we were really segregated. And so the only time we saw most of the other students was in the public areas, the hallways, the stairwells. And that's where I had trouble. So one of the things that's most vivid is walking up and down the stairwells where early and often black girls would be shoving at my back and most demoralizing, kicking at the backs of my feet or shoes as I'm walking up or down. Especially the kicking. I don't know why. I hated that. In the hallways was where guys would be asking, for change. It was always, "Let me hold a nickel." Day after day. And sometimes I would comply. And then other times, after a while, I realized this isn't working out so well. So I would stop. I did stop. And then there were times where a guy would say, he's going to meet me after school. So there were days where I would leave school and run a few blocks and walk home rather than risk any sort of confrontation by waiting for the bus. So that said, outside was actually a pleasant place. I remember often getting candy apples from it. There's a vendor who sells candy apples out of the back of his station wagon in the parking lot. I'd go get a candy apple and wait for the bus. But in any case, after maybe 6 or 8 weeks of school, things aren't improving. So my father calls the principal, Charles Brown, and asks for a meeting. He wants to know, you know, what can be done. What can be done to make things better? So he comes in for the meeting, and the principal really only has one concrete suggestion. He says, teach your son how to fight. Right? Now, I am a scrawny 12-year-old, so I'm not going to be intimidating anybody. And my father wasn't enamored of the idea in any case, so I didn't learn how to fight. What I did do was start claiming to be sick, and my father shows in that time great leniency in terms of letting me stay home. So by the end of the year, I end up missing about 30 days of school, which works out to almost a day a week of the school year. So my grades suffer, and I'm just trying to get through the year. March 31st of 1971, that is the scariest day of the whole year, and there's an altercation, an enormous altercation at Pimlico. We're locked in our classroom. The whole school is locked down. What we can hear in the classroom is just a lot of, we hear breaking glass, we hear things being thrown around, just a lot of noise. And we're eventually released, we're let out of school early before the day would have normally been over. And it's reported the next day in the Baltimore Sun as a melee. And the facts were that 14 students were arrested, 2 students were injured and had to go to the hospital to be treated, and one in my homeroom class. A security guard maced 35 to 40 of the students in a group. And it was just a huge thing that seemed at the time like a riot and was reported, I think, that way. Because it was in the shadow of 1968, which was 3 years earlier, the riots. And it felt as though at the time that there was a racial component. There wasn't, as it turns out. It turned out to be a boycott that had gotten out, it got out of hand, basically. There had been some students who had planned this boycott because of cafeteria food. They were finding broken glass and bugs in the food, and so a group of students had organized a boycott to bring in lunches and refuse to eat the food. It got out of hand. The people who organized the event didn't even get to the cafeteria because it ended up as this giant food fight that got very, very ugly, and they weren't even able to get there. So at that time, or after that, is when I knew that I wouldn't be returning to Pimlico in eighth grade. Because although it was difficult for my father financially to afford for me to leave and go to private school, it wasn't impossible like it was for other families. So when eighth grade begins, I find myself at a relatively small, private, Episcopal, all-boys school, where in some ways I feel more like one of the colored folks than I ever did at Pimlico.